We get the second hour underway, though, by welcoming to the program an actor, comedian, writer, voice actor. You have seen or heard his work on countless films, television shows, and video games. He brings his one-man show, Laughing Through the Pain, My Journey from Detroit to Hollywood, Stand-Up Comedy and Beyond, to New York City for its premiere, one night only, November 9th. That's a Saturday at 7 p.m., part of the United Solo Festival at Theater Row. We are so happy to be joined this afternoon by Joey Kamen. Joey, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Rich, thanks for having me.
What does it feel like to finally get to bring your story to the stage in New York?
I'm actually thrilled. I haven't been to New York City in many, many years, and I've always enjoyed performing in New York. And even though I'm from Detroit, because of my energy or whatever, people think I'm from New York City. They go, hey, you're from the neighborhood, right? They go, no, I actually live in California, but I'm from Detroit. And they go, oh, geez, we thought you lived over on, you know, such and such street. Pretty funny, actually.
What was it like in taking the memoir that you published a few years ago and turning that into a stage production?
Well, you know, when you write an autobiography or any memoir, you're pretty much in a certain, it's laid out a certain way where it's not, I had to adapt it for the stage. So it's me acting out all the characters as opposed to saying what someone said, I become them. So it's acting out little things that I had in the book, and I turned it into stories for an audience so they could get something out of it. And it's really a journey of my life. Actually, it's a serial comedy, Rich, which means it's a serious comedy. There's a lot of very dramatic moments in it. It's a tale of survival, growing up in an abusive household with a father, and how I managed to have a plan at 15 to become a stand-up comedian at 17, and I moved to Hollywood on my own, not knowing anybody. And within a few weeks, I found myself becoming a regular at the world-famous Comedy Store, performing alongside Paul Mooney, Richard Pryor, and I just ended up working there for 25 years among a lot of well-known people.
Well, you mentioned you grew up in Detroit, and so the logical question is, how does a young Jewish guy growing up in black neighborhoods in Detroit go on to become a successful comic and actor in L.A.?
Well, you know, the way I found even about the Comedy Store was, well, it's a little risque, but when I was working in a furniture store, and one of the truck drivers left a copy of Playboy magazine on a chair, and I snagged it. And
you read the articles. You're the guy who read the articles.
I read the article about the Comedy Store. And I was 16. I called Mitzi, and turns out she used to live in Detroit, two blocks from where I grew up.
Wow.
And she said, you know, you can come to the club and audition for me. And I go, okay, I'll be there. And like, what 16-year-old would do that? You know? And I ended up going there, and she loved me, and I was on stage four times in my life. I guess it was a natural. I didn't know what I was doing, and I became a regular performer there. Isn't that wild?
Well, so how did you get the strength to just, obviously you said it was a tough home situation, but not just to walk away from family, but walk away from the life you had known?
It was not a problem. The abuse was so bad that I was like, I got to get out of here, you know? Not my mother or anything. I just had a very hard time with my dad. And so a lot of things happened, and, you know, I made a plan, and I carried it out and went to go work on my dream. And at that young of an age, I was really, really driven, you know, which is rare for a guy that young when I look back on what I did, you know.
And the Comedy Store in those days, and you mentioned some of the names. I mean, it really was the golden age of stand-up.
It was, you know, I worked with these guys for years on stage and performing, and, you know, my trajectory was a little different. When I was 18, I was taken under the wing of a man named Dawes Butler.
Oh, one of my heroes. I was so excited to see that and to talk with you about him.
Yeah, Dawes Butler was the voice, for those of you listening, of Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Drum McGraw, Snagglepuss, Jinx, Pixie, Augie, Doggie. He was Cap'n Crunch. He was Elroy on the Jetsons. And I had a roommate that was working with him. He told him about me, and Dawes wanted to meet me, and he came to see me perform and ask if he could mentor me. And I was, it was wild. It's like when you have talent and you don't know it, it's weird. You just these things happened to me at a very young age. And I just didn't know. You know, it's like you're kind of naive to your talent. You know, it's like it's an interesting point of view to have. I mean, now I'm a grown man. I'm an old guy now. But when it happened back then, I was like, wow. You know, part of me still doesn't believe it.
We're talking with Joey Kamen here on Downtown. Now, can you share the story of how Jay Leno helped get you ready for the Dinah Shore show?
Yeah, Jay was a really cool guy and just super supportive. I've always liked Jay. I remember I was doing this Dinah show, which was back then. I think I was 23 back then. And I would do my set for him. And he'd go, okay, maybe slow it down here, take it there, take it here, take it here. And I went and did it. And then we reviewed the tape afterwards, you know, on one of those old big 3/4-inch machines at his house. And he was just always Jay's always been a really good guy and one of the best stand-up comedians I've ever seen in my life. People know him from Tonight Show and all that stuff. But if you saw him in a club, especially back in those days, he could do 90 minutes like it was nothing. And joke after joke, just an incredible performer. See, people just know him from the Tonight Show and seeing him do like, you know, a few minutes here and there written by writers. No, this was when he was in stand-up at his peak. It was amazing to watch. Just amazing. Yeah.
You worked with another one of my heroes, too. What was the experience like working with the great Jonathan Winters?
Wow. Jonathan and me worked on an animated television series for Fox Kids TV. It was called Little Dracula. And he was my comedy hero. I mean, he was the reason I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. And there was the show was called Little Dracula. It was about a teenage Dracula and his family. It was on Fox Kids TV with 13 episodes. And I voiced a character called Were Bunny, which was a furry toy. It was a cyclops, and it had one eye in the center of its head. It was a very bizarre show. And Jonathan voiced Granny, Dracula's grandmother, and Igor, his assistant. And I was just out of my mind just being next to the guy. And he would sit next to me when I would, read into the microphone, you know, perform into the microphone. And, oh, gosh, just he would during breaks, he would nonstop storytelling. And I was just laughing my butt off. You know, it was just a thrill. I have a picture of me and him together. I rarely ever am impressed with performers or whatever. And he's one of the few people I had to get a picture with. I was just beside myself. It was, he was just so funny and so nice. And just, you know, I mean, he was a former Marine. Most people don't know that. And he had a pacemaker. In fact, because my father had a heart transplant back then and had a pacemaker. And he goes, oh, I have a pacemaker, you know, and he showed me a scar on his chest. He's like, and so most people don't know that about him. And he was just, I can't talk more highly of him and how funny he was. Even in person, he just would just tell stories.
You know?
And he acts out all the characters while he's telling it. And we're sitting right next to him. It's phenomenal.
You've done so much great work on animated programs and a long-running gig on the Smurfs that's become a classic.
Yeah, I did about a year on that show of Natural Smurf, and that was a lot of fun. It was like the character was called Natural Smurf, and I did him for about a year. And that was Hanna-Barbera, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah, you know.
And then, my God, you're the voice of McGruff the Crime Dog, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. Not the original, because that I'd have to be 90 years
right,
old.
Right, right.
But I replaced him doing PSAs and they had back then, it was videos for the schools, and it was like, McGruff the Crime Dog here, and with Rich on the case, we can all take a bite out of crime. So it's like, you know, I would just do these different voices and characters. It was really, everything that I've gotten to do is pretty much a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I can't say that there weren't some bad times, but I usually try to make it fun, even if it's not, you know, and that's the joy in doing any kind of showbiz gig.
What was it like doing The Righteous Apples for PBS?
The Righteous Apples was a series that ran on PBS for 2 years, and it was about a band in Boston, and their goings-on in and out of the school. They were playing teenagers, even though everybody was in their early 20s. And that was fun. It was like a very intense series. It was a serious, it was a comedic drama. And they would tackle subjects in the early 80s that no one tackled, genocide and all these different things that were going on in the neighborhood. And it was just, it was pretty wild. And it was a lot of fun in that series. And it's been a long time, so people aren't really going to know what we're talking about on that one, but they can Google it.
You and I were about the same age. There weren't a lot of video games around when we were kids. So what's it been like to have that experience of voicing so many video games?
Well, video games is another world, and it's really a lot of fun. I mean, I've done stuff like Mafia 2. I did like 40 voices on that, but I only got credit for like, I think, two. And then I did like Skylanders, which is a very popular game for among kids. I did like three characters on that. And that's always a lot of fun because you have a lot of more leeway. The people are pretty that make the video games are pretty wild. So, I mean, they like it when you do crazy stuff, and I have no problem doing that. You know, I haven't been shy at all in public since I was a kid.
Did you ever write down how many different voices you have done through the years?
No, because I don't. I do a few impressions, but I basically do characterizations, which range from, like, you know, I can imitate from black people to little kids to monsters in dialects, just about any kind of dialect, you know, French, Italian, Swedish, Chinese, all in a different dialect, German, British, American, Southern, you know, I would just do it. But I would, you don't really get calls for that a lot. Now it's like politically correct. You have to hire a person who's from that neighborhood or whatever. They don't want to hire you, you know, but it used to not be that way. Where if you did a good dialect of a certain characterization or a certain region of the world, and it sounded fine, they'd hire you. But now it's gotten too politically correct, which I hope it lightens up a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Did you have that skill as a kid? When did you first realize that you could hear other people and become them?
Well, I realized it when I went through puberty and my voice changed from a high-pitched teenage boy to an adult baritone. It was very strange. It was like I could channel certain things, or I could imitate people from my old neighborhoods, and it was just weird. It was like this natural gift. And when I met Dawes, he liked that I had that ability. And Dawes Butler, what he did for me more than anything, because I had a really good ear for dialects and things, and he helped me with confidence. He gave me confidence. He would always encourage me to work more and learn more. And, you know, and your confidence is something that cannot be bought or taught. So, you know, he really was like a great guy. You know, he took his mentoring very, very seriously. On his tombstone, above his name, it says father and mentor. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. I have to ask you about this because I've got a 13-year-old shelter dog at home. Can you talk a little bit about how Snoopy changed your life?
Yeah, that's so funny. He's a 13-year-old. He passed away at 13 and a half. I wrote a book called My Life with Snoopy, How One Shelter Dog's Love Changed a Man's Life and Other Tales of Adventure. That's available on Amazon. I had a traumatic event when I was 10 years old. My parents did a horrible thing with my puppy, and it took me 30 years to love another dog, because I hated dogs after what they did. I'll just say they took away my puppy. You know who takes a puppy away from a 10-year-old?
Yeah.
That's not good. You know, that's pretty horrible. So I regained my love for dogs at the age of 40 by adopting a Burbank shelter dog, and he just changed my life. He was incredible, and I wrote a book about our adventures together because I was so depressed when he passed away. The only way to cope with his death, it was like losing a child to me because I'm childless. You know, I wrote a book about our journey together, and it was very cathartic, and people like it. It's gotten very good reviews on Amazon, and there's even an audiobook version where I read the book. You know, and it was, that was one of the best journeys of my life. You know, that dog, he was a beautiful dog. He was a Sheltie mix with American Eskimo. He was just a gorgeous dog, looked like a little fox, you know.
Check out both of Joey's books, My Life with Snoopy, Laughing Through the Pain, My Journey from Detroit to Hollywood. And if you were in New York City, get yourself to the United Solo Festival Theater Row, Saturday, November 9th at 7 p.m., one night only. Laughing Through the Pain. Joey Kamen, it's great to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Check out Joey there. If you are in New York, you'll love it. And get your hands on those books as well. 21 minutes after the hour here on Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon.